The Civil War may have ended nearly 150 years ago, but the conflict's ghosts continue to swirl. Last week's headlines about the Civil Rights Voting Act and a disgraced celebrity chef put a spotlight on tensions with connections to the Civil War. Dr. Stuart Towns, a retired professor in and department chair for the Communication Studies Department at Southeast Missouri State University, contends much of Southern attitude has been influenced by rousing speeches delivered by Confederate veterans and sympathizers in the years immediately following the Civil War. He writes about those speeches and their lasting effect in his book, Enduring Legacy, Rhetoric and Ritual of the Lost Cause. This weekend, he was in Northwest Arkansas to speak at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale. During his visit, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about his book with Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas.
I think you could write a book, in fact, I may wind up doing it someday, about the history of the South or the history of the United States, and just use the speeches that were made as your primary source material, because they've set the standard. You go back to Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, and bring it all the way up to the recent times, some of Ronald Reagan's speeches when he stood on the by the Berlin Wall and told the Russian premier to tear that wall down. We've had the speech making in our history has really determined our history in so many ways.
How is it different in the South? Speeches were kind of the universities
right.
of the South back
That's
in
exactly
the 1800s.
Right. That's right.
So how is that different than other places in the United States?
The South is very much an oral culture. We love to tell stories. The William Faulkners that lie in within all of us, I think. We love to tell stories. We get together with our families and we reminisce about things that went on in the family two generations behind us, And we're an oral culture. And so in the South, during the antebellum period and all the way through the 19th century and into the 20th century, we love to tell stories. And that is built into our genes almost, it seems like.
My first instinct was because, the South kind of has this reputation, and even 200 years ago, of not being maybe brightest,
mm-hmm.
We have, more people are illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
And even today,
mm-hmm.
Our education system is
right.
not. My immediate thought was, mm-hmm. okay, well, they just had to listen because they couldn't read.
That's a big part of it. That's a huge part of it. No question about it. It still is a rural society in many places. And the education system is not the best in the country. And so we've had to spend a lot of our time listening. That's exactly right. That's a good way of looking at it.
So this book, Enduring Legacy, The Rhetoric and Ritual of the Lost Cause,
mm-hmm.
is primarily about the Lost Cause movement
right.
in the South.
Right, right.
During and after the Civil War.
Right.
And you use quotes that aren't generals
mm-hmm.
and not just prominent people. It's
right.
not Abraham Lincoln. It's
right.
everybody.
That's
it's
right.
soldiers.
That's right.
And
exactly. And what I've tried to do is to look at the common person. I've tried to look at how this public memory of the Lost Cause was created through speechmaking at these three events, the Confederate monument dedications. There's over 1,000 Confederate monuments dedicated to the Confederate soldier or the Confederacy or the Old South or the women of the Confederacy or whatever, all over the South. And Arkansas has probably 35 or 40 of them. And
there's one on the Bentonville Square.
The one on the Bentonville yeah. Square. I took a picture of it the last time I was up here. There's one up just several blocks away from where we're sitting right now at the Confederate Cemetery up there. They're all over. And every time you had one of those dedicated, you had a speech. And that speech was practically the same everywhere. They talk about the heroes of the Confederacy, the way that the Confederate soldier fought and how heroic he was, and in spite of the fact that the North had so many more soldiers and so many more materials and so many more industries and railroads and so on, and he was almost doomed from the start to lose, because of that. But they talked about it, and then also they had Confederate Memorial Day. The women of the South honored the dead Confederates, the ones that were buried in their local graveyard. They go down there on Memorial Day and clean everything up and spruce it up, put flowers out, and you had a speaker. Somebody made a speech, just like they still do right here up in the Confederate Cemetery every year. 140 years in a row now. I think they're up to 140, their 140th one. And then the old soldiers getting together after the war, just like soldiers have done for eons, ever since man has had wars, they've had the old soldiers get together and have reunions and talk about, tell war stories and tell lies about what they did in the war and share that with each other. And you had a speaker, or a bunch of speakers, actually, and they would talk about the war and talk about the lost cause. And so that was just repeated over and over and over and over again for just decades. And so that got ingrained in the memory of the South. The white South just made part of their life. And so that's why we're celebrating the sesquicentennial of the war. The Civil War was such a momentous event in our history as Americans, Southerners as well as Northerners, black and white. And so we're still celebrating it today. And part of the reason we're still celebrating it is all those hundreds and hundreds of speeches that were made at those three events all over the South, and that's what the book's about.
How were these speeches recorded? You know, this was before the days of recording.
They would print them. There'd be a local group, maybe the Memorial Association or the Ladies Monument Association or the United Confederate Veterans Organization would have them printed, and then I found hundreds of them in libraries all over the South. I've looked all over from Maryland and Virginia all the way down to Texas and just dozens of libraries. And in most libraries that I've looked in, there have been speeches that I've found. And you know, I've got copies of them in my files, hundreds of them. The newspapers, local newspaper, would have them, big excerpts from them on the very front page of the newspaper in many cases. In some cases, there'd be the entire speech that the person had given.
So what was the general attitude?
The general thing they were trying to do, it kind of shifted from one time to another, but immediately after the war, for the first couple of decades, what they were trying to do is to kind of lift the South up. They had been defeated. They had been not just defeated, but crushed by the South. All the major battles except Gettysburg were fought in the South, and so destruction was just widespread. The South lost hundreds of thousands of men in the prime of their life, and so their economy was shot. Cream of the crop of their men had been killed or maimed in the war. And so what the orators were trying to do in those first couple of decades was just kind of uplift them and say, hey, we're going to get back on our feet. We're going to get things going again. And so that was the first couple of decades. Then it began to shift into a more prideful kind of thing, looking back and say, you know, we fought this war, we were heroic in what we did, we really worked hard at it, we were fighting for something we believed in. They had kind of rebuilt their pride, and so now they were kind of demonstrating that pride and say, by golly, we were good soldiers, you know, some of the greatest soldiers in the history of mankind, and Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson and all these guys were really great soldiers. And
so, well, what about like during, Reconstruction?
Yeah, Reconstruction. A lot of Southerners felt like Reconstruction was as bad as the war or worse. They really did. They just felt like the Reconstruction was being revengeful and trying to put the South down even further. They'd lost the war and they now tried to keep pounding them even after the war was over with the Reconstruction issues and bills and Reconstruction governments across the South and so on. And so I've got a number of speeches that talked, say, in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s about Reconstruction would be just as bad as the war was, just in many ways. And so they believe that. And I've got some speeches in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement where people like Faubus and George Wallace from Alabama, Ross Barnett from Mississippi, used the Lost Cause as part of their justification for segregation.
They actually referred back to it.
That's right, exactly. And I have said many times that the South lost the war, but they won the peace, because after Reconstruction was over, the South was just allowed by the Supreme Court, the President, the Congress, just basically ignored the creation of the segregated society in the South. And so they lost the war, but won the peace. They were allowed to do whatever they wanted to do to set up the segregated system.
Orville Faubus and Barnett, mm-hmm. and you mentioned these people, and you mentioned
right.
the civil rights movement,
right.
and you mentioned that the federal government just kind of let the states mm-hmm. do the segregation, but we're not segregated anymore.
Right, but we're still remembering the Civil War. We're still celebrating it, and I think it's still very much alive and well today. And if you stop to think about it, we may not be segregated, but we still have a lot of racial issues in the country, not just in the South, but in the country. The immigration issue that we're battling over right now is in part a racial issue. We still have issues about what's the relationship between the federal government and the states. That was a Civil War issue. And we're still talking about that today. It's not settled by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I mean, just this week has been a big week for, I mean, for a few of those things. Yeah. I mean, with the Supreme Court decisions.
That's right.
And Paula Deen has been in the news.
Exactly.
So it's been a big week.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not going to go away. I mean, I think that the South is, there are a lot of people in the South that who had relatives in their families who fought for the side of the South in the Civil War. I've got a couple of them that I know of for sure. My wife has some relatives. She's a member of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. You know, and we do that as a way of memorializing and honoring people and remembering people in our family who fought in the war. And it's just like we would memorialize somebody in our family who fought in World War II. I was up in Washington just last couple of weeks ago, and went to the World War II memorial up there, which is so impressive. And three busloads of veterans from World War II drove up to see got their wheelchairs out and their canes out, and I got goosebumps just looking at the memorial myself, and I'm not a World War II veteran. And you see these guys coming in, and you could just see the expression on their face. They were just stunned by this memorial. Well, we memorialize those people that were in our families, and so we're doing the same thing about people in our family who had fought in the war. And so that's why the Sons of Confederate Veterans or the United Daughters of the Confederacy or the Military Order of the Stars and Bars are still active today, and very much active. They still have the reenactments out at Prairie Grove, the reenactment back in December, and a horrible day, it was pouring down rain, and yet there were thousands of people out there to watch the reenactment. And part of the reason why is because of the speeches that were made that I talk about in the book that helped to create this public memory that we still have 150 years later.
Is there anything comparable in history? I mean, you bring up World War II and that memorial, but is it comparable?
If you put it in the context of how many people were killed in during the Civil War, almost 750,000 Americans died in the Civil War. That's more than every other war in our history up until the Vietnam, not including the Vietnam War, but up to the Vietnam War. There's more people killed in the Civil War, died during the Civil War, soldiers who died during the Civil War than all the rest of our wars combined. And so from that standpoint, it was really you couldn't compare it to anything. It's just a matter of it was so much impact on our culture, and so much of the South was devastated by the war. Some people would say they haven't even recovered now in the South from a lot of that because we're still behind economically. It's still a rural area. It's still an area that's, as you pointed out a while ago, behind in some educational areas and so on. And so it had a huge impact on the South, no doubt, no question about it. And I'm not sure you can compare it to anything else. Like Shelby Foote said, he's one of my favorite historians, and he was talking about the Civil War on that – the Civil War series that Ken Burns did several years ago on television, and he said it was the major crossroads of our history, and he said it was a hell of a crossroads, and that's I think it was that's a good way to put it.
Well, the cover of this book, it's an SUV, kind of a rough truck,
right,
flying a Confederate flag.
Yeah.
I mean, the Confederate flag is, I mean, it's a big issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, even today, schools ban kids wearing shirts, I mean, Georgia changed their flag.
Right.
The Arkansas flag is sort of
right. That's right. It has something, and I think that's a big issue. And the fact that the Confederate flag has been used by groups like the KKK as their symbol, and there's a big issue right now going on in Memphis. The Memphis City Council voted back in, I guess it was January, to change the name of Nathan Bedford Forest Park over there. And there's also a Jefferson Davis Park and a Confederate Park in town, down by the Mississippi River, that they wanted to change the name of that too, of all three of those. And the Sons of Confederate Veterans over there were up in arms against that, trying to oppose it. And one of the comments one of them made to me was, if we can just keep the KKK out of this, we might can win. If the KKK gets involved, there's no way we can win. And so I think that's a good example of the fact that during the Civil Rights Movement of the 50s and 60s, the Confederate flag was waved as a symbol of opposition to integration, and When it's really not that. I think I like the bumper sticker that I've seen. It says "Heritage, not hate," and it's a Sons of Confederate Veterans bumper sticker. And what they're trying to say there is we're trying to honor the heritage of our families, the heritage of our region, which is part of the heritage of all Southerners. Every Southerner Southern family at that era was touched by the Civil War. Every black family was touched by the Civil War. There's a comment in the book about a Georgian legislator who from Atlanta who made a comment after a long debate about the flag in Georgia. He said, you know, I finally got to the point of realizing that just because somebody has a different opinion from yours on this issue, they don't hate you. And I think that's a good way of looking at it. You know, the history is our history, and we shouldn't try to erase that.
Right.
We need to keep it, you know, and understand it, try to understand it. And I think that's what my book tries to do, is to help people understand better how the history was created and how it got to the point that it is today, why it is like it is today.
Well, you spend a lot of time traveling around and speaking.
Right.
So why? Why is that something that you enjoy doing?
The main reason is I want to get the word out about this how this public memory was created and why it was so important and why it's still, you know, why we celebrate the Civil War today would be a good, you know, why the Civil War still matters today.
Well, and here you are giving speeches. Mm-hmm. Are you yourself creating some sort of oral history?
I'm sure I am. Yeah, I'm sure people. In fact, I've had a number of people make very favorable comments and say, you know, I didn't understand all of this till I read your book. I gave one talk over in Little Rock, and I had three fellows come up after it was over, and all three of them had retired to Little Rock. One of them from Iowa, and a couple of them from Illinois, I think. And they said, you know, you talked about some things tonight that I've been trying to figure out and understand, and I think I now understand more about the South after hearing you talk about. And I said, well, that's exactly why I'm talking about it. I want people to understand more about the South and why the South is like it is and how the memories of the Civil War are really still important to us.
Yeah. Stuart Towns is the author of the book Enduring Legacy, Rhetoric and Ritual of the Lost Cause. He spoke this weekend at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, and while he was in town, also spoke to Ozark's largest, Christina Thomas.